I will not rest, and I'm going to make sure that the leaders at every level of government don't rest until every drop of water that flows to your homes is safe to drink and safe to cook with and safe to bathe in, because that's part of the basic responsibilities of a government in the United States of America.
A lot of what this show has become for me, no matter how many people are or are not listening, how much response we do or do not get, or even regardless sometimes of the stories that come out, is this has become a way for me to document. Whether it does a good thing now or whether it does a good thing later, I just want to document exactly what this time in America means. We are in 2017. We are officially in summer. And as of this moment, while I am on this microphone, absolutely nothing has happened for the good people of Flint, Michigan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 211. On this show, or any of the shows that I do, we're not always going to necessarily cover the stuff that's at the top of your local newspapers or even the top of the national newspapers. There's still a ton of things that absolutely get no coverage, and it makes me absolutely bat guano insane. I don't know why that this is okay with the rest of America. Think about it. The poisoning of an entire American city because they thought, you know, they've got, in Michigan, they've got the emergency manager law, which is, it sounds nice, right? Emergency manager law. Someone's going to manage the place during an emergency. But what it really means is the governor holds all of the power. All he has to do is declare that your city is in a state of emergency, and then he can strip all of the local officials of all of their power. I'm just reminding everybody of how this went down. And when the governor of Michigan did that, he decided that Flint was in crisis and he needed to have an emergency manager. That emergency manager, acting under the governor, the Republican governor of Michigan, decided that they were going to go ahead and privatize the water. So they switched the water source for Flint, and they switched it to a source that was untreated and unfiltered. And eventually what happened is that water, that untreated water, began to wear away the insides of the city's, the inside of the city's water lines. And eventually, because they're old pipes, eventually those pipes started breaking down and lead started leaching out of them. The city of Flint, Michigan right now is dealing with an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease. And initially, when terrible, dirty-ass water was pouring out of the faucet, the local officials just threw their hands away. I don't know what you're talking about. It's the best freaking water in the world. Well, here's a glass of it. Why don't you take a glass of it? Oh, I already have some water. I'm not going to need any more water for ever, or at least not from this city. And they just pretended that it wasn't a thing. And the people show up with their jugs of dirty water. Look! Something is wrong with the damn water. Do something about the damn water. It has been years since this has broke. It's like 3-4 years. See that? I've even lost count. I just know that this has been a thing for too damn long. Now let's pretend that it's Iraq. Perhaps if it were the people of Iraq, right? And say we weren't occupying Iraq right now. And we heard that the people of Iraq were being poisoned by their government. Well, Iraq has got some oil and some other resources. I mean, we would be up in, oh my God, we got to go into Iraq. We got to, because the good people of Iraq. No. It seems that we never do things for the right reason. I was stunned back in 2005 when the city of New Orleans, which if you live in America, hell, if you live on planet Earth, you know what New Orleans, you've heard of New Orleans. You've heard of Mardi Gras. You've seen the pictures. You've probably flipped up your shirt to get yourself some beads. Everybody knows. Everybody knows about NOLA. Everybody knows about New Orleans. And I remember watching, and I saved the Time magazine that was put out during that time. I remember watching people sitting on overpasses, sitting on the roofs of their homes, and just dying, you know, with the signs, and we're thirsty. I remember seeing elderly people just dropping dead or slumping over and dying in their wheelchairs. The city's full of water. I remember seeing bodies. This is a major American city in a developed nation. Bodies floating all over the place. And over on Fox News and all the right-wing drudge and all the rest, well, what they should have done was the buses. They should have got out of town on the buses. Town's got a bunch of buses. Look at this bus barn full of buses. Why didn't they get out of town on the freaking buses? And this is why we have government. It is the collected efforts of us. It is us saying that we are not going to stand for this, that we're going to do something about this, that we're going to do something about this collectively. Whenever we hear about terrible things happening around the world, atrocities happening around the world, governments doing terrible things to their people, unless if you've listened to recent episodes, when it comes to Saudi Arabia, we're totally cool with whatever the hell they do. Behead people in the square every Friday? Fine. That's just your version of it's 5 o'clock somewhere. But whenever we hear about these terrible things, we need to do something. We start signing petitions. We start sharing things on social media. We start doing all kinds of useless things that seem like we care. Where we feign outrage. But it's happening. And it's happening here. Right now. In America. And it's absolutely insane. We have poisoned an entire American city. And 3 years later, 3-4 years later, these people are still suffering. They still don't have clean water. And now they've began dying of Legionnaire's disease.
It doesn't matter how hard you work, how responsible you are, how well you raise your kids, you can't set up a whole water system for a city. That's not something you do by yourself. You do it with other people. You can't hire your own fire department or your own police force or your own army. There are things we have to do together, basic things that we all benefit from. Volunteers don't build county water systems and keep lead from leaching into our drinking glasses. We can't rely on faith groups to reinforce bridges and repave runways at the airport. We can't ask second graders, even ones as patriotic as Isaiah Britt, who raised all that money, to raise enough money to keep our kids healthy. You hear a lot about government overreach. Oh, he's for big government. Listen, it's not government overreach to say that our government's responsible for making sure you can wash your hands in your own sink or shower in your own home or cook for your family. These are the most basic services. There's no more basic element sustaining human life than water. It's not too much to expect for all Americans that their water is going to be safe.
I like the idea of President Obama saying that he's not going to rest until they have clean water. And I sincerely hope that somewhere out there, he is still working behind the scenes on this. Because when Donald Trump had a chance to show leadership on this, and now that he's president, he really can show a degree of leadership. But when he was campaigning in Flint, Michigan, he decided to do a whole nother thing that had absolutely nothing to do with water.
Hillary failed on the economy, just like she's failed on foreign policy. Everything she touched didn't work out. Nothing. Now Hillary Clinton.
Mr. Trump, I invite you here to thank us for...
Okay. That's good.
This is a very famous audio clip from a video clip. Obviously, we don't do video clips here on the show. But in that clip, that was the pastor of the church in Flint. Because he just got up in front of the church and he thinks it's one of his campaign rallies, one of his Klan rallies. Where he can just get up there and go, white people rule, women suck. And he's just going to get this rousing applause. You were in Flint, Michigan, sir. And you had an opportunity. You had an opportunity to say something about what they were dealing with in Flint, Michigan. And what you instead decided to do was to politic from the pulpit. And that's really all Republicans seem to do these days, is politic from the religious pulpit. Seems to me that if Jesus really, really had his ways, if he really had his druthers, the people of Flint, Michigan would have clean water. They would have functional, modern, safe schools. They would have job opportunities. But none of that really matters if they don't have the most basic, as President Obama said, building block of life, if they don't have water. Well, you've been president for 5 months now, and the Flint thing is still happening, still very real. So, sir, where are you at on this? Perhaps Flint could get some assistance. Maybe we'd be willing to spend some money. Oh, wait a minute. We can't do that. Flint is full of two things that the president does not particularly care for. It's full of black people and it's full of Democrats. So where the hell does the president want to spend more money?
U.S. military is essentially a manpower-heavy, high-tech enterprise. And if you're going to continue to expand that, you are going to have fixed costs. You're going to have to maintain all those weapons. You may or may not use them. You're going to have to pay people. You're going to have to provide health care. These are huge bills. Is the Congress really going to fund all of this is a big question. But let's even go back one step further. Trump puts out all these numbers. You had a graphic a minute ago up there of the statistics of the size of what he would like to see. Tens of thousands in the army, thousands of additional fighter jets, that kind of thing. I think most military commanders, when you look at those numbers, would say, wait a minute, those are numbers, but what is it you're trying to do? What is the threat out there? What is the military capability you need to match that threat, to deal with that threat? Capabilities and numbers of aircraft, numbers of ships, numbers of people are two different things. It really has to start, most commanders will tell you, with what is it that you're trying to do.
The Defense Department is something that never, ever has to ask for money. And as a matter of fact, more than a few times, they have senior officials in the Defense Department have turned to the Congress and said, we don't really need this money. So maybe you could not, I mean, we're doing fine. And Congress says, well, I don't know. You know, they looked at us cockeyed in this country and that country, and we might need to build a base in this country or that country. And I'm curious. I'm honestly curious. I had my dad say to me recently, he says, I don't understand the liberal mind. It got more poisonous than that. I'll talk about that another time. I was going to talk about it today, but the wound is still fresh. It went a lot deeper. But he said, I don't understand the liberal mind. And I pointed out to him, well, the reason you don't understand the liberal mind is because you, admittedly, sir, you are not talking to liberals. Perhaps when people want to know what conservatives think, they shouldn't ask you. They should come to me and they should ask me. Now, I'm a better person. I think I'm better than most. But let's say you ask somebody like Stephanie Miller or Ed Schultz. You know, those guys are super progressive and they get dogged on conservatives. Should people start asking Stephanie Miller what conservatives think all the time? Now, she's going to get it right some of the time, but she's definitely not going to get it right most of the time because for her, she's quite anti-conservative. And I don't necessarily disagree with her, but I think sometimes you can begin painting caricatures, unbelievable caricatures of other people when you start coloring them the way that you see them, when you try to paint them in the worst light possible. If you want to know what somebody thinks, if you want to understand somebody's mind frame, you should ask them. And so I said, so, Dad, why don't you ask me? you know, and he kind of hems and haws. And I said, well, let me tell you what I think of healthcare. And we came to the exact same place on healthcare. Universal healthcare sounds like a good idea to us. And the words came out of his mouth. He goes, everybody just pays a little bit of money and it's into the same thing. And then I go, yes. And he goes, is that socialism? And I go, no. Well, yeah. Sorry, Dad. It is. It's socialism. Oh, welcome to my party. And I said, you should ask somebody what they think before telling them that you don't understand what they think, because you're allowing them to be defined by another person, by this outside force. And here's where I'm at. I think I understand conservatism and the history of conservatism. Barry Goldwater conservatism, and even further back, Hoover and all the rest. But when it comes to the Pentagon, when it comes to the Defense Department right now, the people that want them to have all of the money that they need and lots more money that they do not need are almost, and I say almost entirely conservative. It's this one thing that Christian conservatives have no problem spending ungodly amounts of money on. Now, it's not just them. There's some Democrats too, because even Bernie Sanders voted for some military programs because those military programs that military equipment is made in his state. So obviously not everybody's hands are clean on this. But when it comes to spending money on, say, Flint, Michigan, I say we should do it. Yeah, even if it costs $100 million, even if it costs $1 billion, what is that? Is that a bomber? Fine. You know what? One less bomber, and then the people of Flint get to have clean water. Does that make me a freaking socialist? Does that make me insane? Yeah. Yeah, it kind of does. And a lot of conservative folks aren't necessarily with me on that. And I don't know why we're so quick to spend so much money on something so insane as war.
I learned that war makes murderers, mass murderers, out of otherwise decent people. And it applies to all wars and all nationalities. And I've seen it in all the wars. These are not wild animals who are out for blood. These are patriots who are trying to do their duty to protect either their religion or their nationality or their economic security. These are the three major causes. We have not learned that you cannot kill an ideology with a gun. We still go at it with the same stupid approach of spending all of your assets on building weapons and more weapons to kill more people and depriving people of the things they need to eliminate the fears which they have in their life. Man who's desperate because he has no job and has no money. If the money spent on weapons could be spent on eliminating the cause of his discontent, he's not going to risk his life and go out and kill people the way they do today.
That's Ben Ferencz, all of 95 years old, who was a Nuremberg prosecutor. And I talked about him a lot in a recent show, and it just points out the insanity of war. But there is also a lot of tribalism, a lot of national pride that goes along with these wars. A lot of us against them. This whole team mentality. You know, my sports team is going to beat the hell out of your sports team. But you have to. These aren't sports teams that we're talking about. These are human beings, usually very young guys in their teens, early 20s, sometimes older. I've seen the numbers come out on Veterans Day, and I've seen guys in their 40s. That died in action. And it's insane to me that we think that this is the best use of our resources, or that this is making us safer, or that this is doing anything for us, when it really only seems to be growing the threat even worse. The idea was, we got hit on 9/11, let's go into Iraq, let's go into Afghanistan, and here we are 15, 16 years later, still fighting those insane wars. And recently, the Bolivian ambassador pointed out to us the insanity in U.S. policy, because we are complaining so much about ISIS right now, but we know how ISIS got created. ISIS got created through mostly through the Iraq war, but it's largely through the way we've conducted ourselves in the Middle East for a long time. But the ex-Baathists are the ones that became ISIS. And he pointed out, you can't really look to America for guidance on this particular issue because it is their policy that brought us ISIS.
And I'd like to recall what happened in this very Security Council just a few years ago, specifically on Wednesday, the 5th of February 2003, when the then Secretary of State of the United States of America came to this room to present to us, according to his own words, convincing proof that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I believe that we must absolutely remember these pictures and that this, in this very hall, we were told
que habían armas de destrucción
that there were
masiva en Irak,
weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and this was the motivation for an invasion. And that invasion, after this invasion, there was 1 million deaths.
Y se ha desatado
and
una serie de atrocidades
it
en la
launched
región.
A series of atrocities
podríamos
in that region.
Hablar de ISIS
could we
sin
talk
esa invasión?
About ISIS if that invasion had not taken
podríamos
place,
hablar de esa,
could we be talking
esa serie de gravísimos
about
the series
of horrendous attacks in various parts of the world had
ilegal?
That invasion, this illegal invasion, not taken place?
Here in America, the debate is quite different. You heard the ambassador, Sasha Llorente, mention in that clip that immediately after the war, you know, or after the war started, million casualties right away. You know, soldiers, civilians, million casualties. We are a million dead. And if you think about World War II, 6 million Jews just slaughtered, you know, and just burned up in ovens and all that, just systematically killed, you know, thousands killed a day. You know, finally 6 million of them killed. We hear that number and we go, holy hell. And then America carries out a foreign policy. It doesn't help us. Doesn't make us safer, doesn't do anything for us. It just makes a lot of military contractors very, very rich. And it helps to create ISIS. But here in America, at least the way we conduct our dialogue on the radio and television, we seem like we have ISIS. Where the hell did these guys come from? They must just hate America. They must just hate freedom. And we can't agree how ISIS even got started.
Last night you said the president was the founder of ISIS. I know what you meant. You meant that he created the vacuum, he lost the peace.
No, I meant he's the founder of ISIS. I do. He's the most valuable player. I give him the most valuable player award. I give her, too, by the way.
But he's not sympathetic to them. He hates them. He's trying to kill them.
He was the founder. The way he got out of Iraq was that was the founding of ISIS.
Well, I have a saying, Donald Trump. The mnemonic device I use is every liberal seems so sad. E is for Egypt, L is for Libya, S is for Syria, R is for Russia reset. They screwed everything up. You don't get any argument from me, but by using the term founder, they're hitting with you on this again. Mistake?
No, it's no mistake. Everyone's liking it. I think they're liking it. I give them the most valuable player award. And I give it to him, and I gave a co-founder to Hillary. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, I did. I played it.
I gave her the co-founder.
I know what you're arguing.
Let me ask you, do you not like that?
I don't. I think I would say they lost the peace. They created the Libyan vacuum. They created the vacuum into which ISIS came, but they didn't create ISIS. That's what I would say.
Well, I disagree.
All right, that's okay.
I mean, with his bad policies, that's why ISIS came about.
That's true.
If he would have done things properly, you wouldn't have had
that's
ISIS.
True.
Therefore, he was the founder of ISIS.
That's. I just use different language to communicate. But let me close with this, because I know I'm keeping you long, and hope's going to kill me.
But they wouldn't talk about your language, and they do talk about my language, right?
Good point.
And that is the point. The only language he speaks is hate. He goes, look, I just said something unhinged and hateful. And it doesn't matter if it's true. I just said it. And Hugh Hewitt was right there on the air trying to give him talking points. Here's our talking points. Here's what we're saying. Here's what we're saying about ISIS and Obama. Here's what we're saying. You should say this. No. No, you don't want to say that? Well, that's what you should say. He tried to give him an out. And he goes, nah, most valuable player, and she got second in MVP, and that's great, huh? And this is actual dialogue that we're having about ISIS. Not even owning up to the fact that we played a massive role in the creation of ISIS. I saw an Iraq veteran a number of months ago talking about this, because you have to wonder how this kind of thing plays on the ground. So all of the men and women that we send into battle, and we leave them out there, we get them killed. They're far away from their families. They're not paid very well. They're not given a nice, clear directive or an objective about what they're supposed to be doing, what things are supposed to look like. If there's a favorable outcome, we really, frankly, honestly give them nothing. And this guy, I believe it was on MSNBC, I cut this clip a while ago, he points out exactly how this kind of dialogue, when everyone knows the history, he points out how this kind of dialogue plays on the ground for both our troops and for the terrorists.
Donald Trump has shown that he lies every single day, and then the next day he just tries to claim it was sarcasm. He's completely reckless and unfit to be our commander-in-chief. And, I mean, what happens when he presses the nuclear button and then the next day says, oh, I'm sorry, I was just being sarcastic? It's ridiculous that we're even talking about someone like this being our commander-in-chief. And it's dangerous for our troops. I mean, let me tell you how this plays out on the ground in the Middle East. I was visiting the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan just 3 weeks ago. These troops have to work every single day with our Afghan and Iraqi partners. In fact, we're trying to make sure that they take the fight to ISIS themselves. But when Trump claims that America is the founder of ISIS, that's something that ISIS uses against us. That's something that ISIS uses to recruit fighters, to recruit terrorists, to attack American troops. It makes the work of our troops harder. And it just shows that Trump has absolutely no idea what it takes to fight ISIS, what it takes to be commander-in-chief, and he has certainly no clue what it means to put your life on the line for our country.
We don't have a clear objective. We don't know really what we want to do. We're not able to explain this to the American people. And this thing, the discussion, the debates about these wars, which were so heavily debated, and I showed up at so many protests, and I lived in Spokane at the time, and Spokane is hugely conservative, but there's really no discussion about any of this, about where we should go, how we should conduct ourselves, what we should do, what a favorable outcome would look like, and it's destroying American credibility. It's destroying America, because this doesn't just cost lives. This costs money as well. And when it's blood and when it's treasure and we don't, and the world doesn't know what the hell we're thinking, it really leaves us with absolutely nothing. And then these troops come back and they've got PTSD, and that's just here at home. Out there, the people where the Americans don't know what it's like, at least not the ones that are alive, don't have a real good memory of what it's like to have a war fought on our land. They go, what about Pearl Harbor? Fine, I get it. Okay, but by and large, I'd say the vast majority of the people listening to this program right now, the vast majority of the people that are alive right now don't really have any memory of that. And if they do, they'll be passing soon, because the people that fought in that war were in their 20s when that happened, and that happened 70 years ago. We don't live forever. So we don't really know a lot about what it's like to have a war fought on our land. And then when we go to these other lands and we carry out these missions and we slaughter these people, and then these terrorist cells form and they fight back, we go, they're savages. My God, what are we going to do with these savages? Why do they hate America so much? Why do they hate freedom? Ignoring all the while what this really does to us, to our people, to our treasury, to our credibility, not to mention the lives and the livelihood of the people in these other countries. When the Iraq war started, say 2003, it's now 2017, think about the kids that were young at that time, 4, 5, 6 years old. 14 years later, they're old enough to be in their second or third year of college. And they've grown up in a country, in a world where they've known nothing, absolutely nothing but war.
I learned that war makes murderers, mass murderers, out of otherwise decent people. And it applies to all wars and all nationalities, and I've seen it.
And I mentioned the debate here at home with respect to the war is non-existent. We forget the fact that we spend most, or all, I mean almost, either about 50% or just over 50% on the Pentagon. We spend all of our money on the Pentagon. And the president and the Republicans in Congress, they're arguing right now that what we need to do is we need to spend more money on the war. Well, what are we going to do about our domestic programs? Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, he's got some ideas. He's got some cuts. He's got some things that he would definitely like to cut, starting with free lunch. This is Mick Mulvaney saying, look, the money that we spend on education, supposed to be on education, we ain't supposed to be feeding these damn kids, you know, like Jesus said.
They're supposed to be educational programs, right? I mean, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to help kids who don't get fed at home get fed so they do better in school. Guess what? There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually doing that. There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually helping results, helping kids do better in school.
Barack and Michelle have become more public in recent weeks, I'd say in the last month or so. They got out of the limelight for a little while. They didn't make any statements. They just let the new guy do his thing. He's failing, and he's failing miserably. So they've decided to start taking on some other projects, some other more public projects, extensions, effectively, of things that they were doing when they were in the White House. And for Michelle Obama, the lunches, the thing with the lunches is still a very big deal to her. She says, we need to be feeding our kids right. We need to be getting our kids out off their butts, and we need to get them moving. And the first thing, one of the first things, and I think with respect to the Republicans and the Republican president, the only thing, they're not trying to help you. They're not trying to do anything good. They're not trying to do anything lasting. All they're trying to do is erase everything that the black guy did. It doesn't matter whether it's Cuba, whether it's healthcare, whether it's lunches, just erase everything that the black guy did. It doesn't matter what the effect of it is. We just need to erase everything that the black guy did.
Yeah, this is where you really have to look at motives. You know, I mean, you have to stop and think, why don't you want our kids to have good food at school? What is wrong with you? And why is that a partisan issue? Why would that be political? What is going on? Think about this. I don't care what state you live in. Take me out of the equation. Like me, don't like me. But think about why someone is okay with your kids eating crap. Why would you celebrate that? Why would you sit idly and be okay with that? Because here's the secret. If somebody is doing that, they don't care about your kid. And every elected official on this planet should understand, don't play with our children. Don't do it.
Let me be straight up with you. I, as much as the next guy, I enjoy eating crap. I like candies and cakes and chips and all the fun stuff. But for the sustenance that we receive throughout the day, yeah, that stuff should definitely be nutritious. And when it comes to kids, and we're talking about body development, and we're talking about brain development and all these other things, they need to be eating good food. And I remember the outrage over the Michelle Obama thing, the whole program. Clearly, it's just political for people that they can't do stuff we don't want them to. They want my kids to eat vegetables? My God, what are we living in, communist China? No, we're not. They might be eating better there. I don't pretend to know everything about that country. But to see people freaking out with the first lady, because every first lady is a pet project. Speaking of which, Trump's wife, Melania, she too mentioned her pet project, probably anticipating that Trump was never going to become president. And I saw it as her maybe just trying to take a public stance against bullying, despite the fact that her husband calls women fat, pig, stupid, and lame. So her pet project was supposed to be an anti-bullying campaign. And so here we are, 5 months later. Yo, Melania, how about that anti-bullying campaign, huh? So official word from the White House is she's dropped it. She's got no interest in it. She's not going to – they're not putting any effort, energy, resources, anything. It's just done. It's over with before it even started because it was never, ever really supposed to happen. And so Michelle's pet project was the lunch thing, and I thought it was a fair idea. And who's against their kids eating well? My kids eat ice cream 3 meals a day. My kids pee cola. You know, the soda. Sorry. I feel like it's a ridiculous thing. So, but what are they doing? I mean, they can't just be erasing things that the black guy does. What are they doing? Is Trump taking on the bankers like he said he would? No. As a matter of fact, they have hired 5 or 6 or 7. I've lost count of how many Goldman Sachs bankers they've hired to work for him. Okay, well, what are we doing about the criminal justice system? Are we going to do anything about the abusive? No, because the police, they're killing a lot of black people, a lot of unarmed black people. So we're just going to allow that to happen. Okay, well, what are we going to do about marijuana laws? Hopefully nothing, because you said nothing about them on the trail. Oh, no. We're going to start making marijuana illegal again and locking people up and bringing back mandatory minimum sentencing. Okay, are you going to take on Wall Street? No, you've hired a bunch of people from Wall Street. My God, there's got to be something. There's got to be something that you're going to keep. You're going to make healthcare better, right? You said you're going to make it better and cheaper and more accessible. And the bill that's going through the Senate right now, they won't even release the text of it. Nobody gets to look at it. Nobody gets to offer amendments. They're not looking for any Democratic votes on it. They don't care about the CBO score. They don't want the people's input. Bloody hell, what are you guys doing? Aha. There's one thing I remember Trump saying on the campaign trail that I found particularly interesting. And it's someplace where he agreed with Bernie Sanders. And I stroked my chin and I said, actually, you and I agree on that, Mr. Orange Man.
But more importantly, in a sense, I want to keep it. These people have been making their payments for their whole lives. I want to keep Social Security intact. I want to get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. I want to do a lot of things to it that are going to make it much better, actually. But I'm not going to cut it. And I'm not going to raise ages. And I'm not going to do all of the things that they want to do. But they want to really cut it. And they want to cut it very substantially, the Republicans. And I'm not going to do that.
So there he is. He says he's not going to cut Social Security. And I go, you're a terrible human being all the way around. Racist, sexist, homophobic, all the rest. Your dad was a Klansman. Fine. Okay. But maybe you're not all bad, right? Perhaps we're going to keep Social Security. Because you said it yourself. You clearly understand it. It's not a government thing that is just given to us. We pay into it. We get the money back. It's no different than when we put money into a bank account and then we just get our own money back, with the small exception that it tends to grow at a faster rate than, say, your checking account does. And it's backed up by the federal government, which I believe we still have a pretty good rating with Moody's and all the rest, maybe. I'm getting somebody to check on that right now. Apparently, we've got Republicans in charge, so that part is still kind of shady. So, Social Security, tell me, Mang. You're going to protect Social Security. And Bernie Sanders did something brilliant with respect to this by using Trump's own words against him, because he sent out a tweet about it. And I say against him, you'll understand why in a moment. But Bernie Sanders said, you know what? I agree with you. You said it out loud multiple times and at your rallies. You said it in a tweet. Let's work together to keep Social Security.
Let me quote somebody who I suspect I will not often be quoting. On May 7th, 2015, Donald Trump tweeted, quote, I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Now, the point is, Trump didn't just say this in passing. He didn't say it in the middle of the night. He didn't say it in a particular interview. This was a cornerstone of his campaign. He said it over and over and over again. Donald Trump said he will not cut Social Security. He will not cut Medicare. He will not cut Medicaid. Therefore, one of two things are true. Either Donald Trump simply lied to the elderly and the working people of this country and just made campaign promises that he had no intention of ever keeping. That is one reality. Or there is another reality. And that is right now, before Congress wastes an enormous amount of time, Donald Trump has got to come forward, maybe through one of his tweets, and say clearly that Donald Trump will veto any legislation that cuts Medicare, that cuts Medicaid, or that cuts Social Security. And if he makes that clear to his Republican colleagues, we can save us all a whole lot of time and start getting to work doing what this country desperately needs to have done.
Donald Trump is currently in talks with his budget director and Republicans in Congress, in both the House and the Senate, about the best, most extensive and deep ways to cut Social Security, to cut Social Security as deep as humanly possible and eventually maybe even eliminate it. Just take all the money that you paid in, your earned benefit, okay, not your government handout, your earned benefit. He is now looking to slash the hell out of that. So what the hell is this guy doing for you, if anything? And I say that in all seriousness, and I put this question to Democrats. I expect silence. I put this question to Republicans. I expect an answer. Please bring it to me. Challenge me. Tell me something that he is doing for you, that the Republicans are doing for you. Let me broaden this out a little bit. Give me something that the Republicans have ever done for you. A bill that they passed, that they championed, that they co-sponsored, that was meant to help you. I'm fairly certain you're going to be disappointed when you realize it's not a single one. Are we ready to say now, as Republican voters, are you now ready to say that you've been suckered, that you got played? Because as this clip points out that I played a couple of shows ago from Jared Kushner's editor-in-chief, Donald Trump really did this because he thinks the Republican voters are stupid.
I want to read something you wrote about the birtherism that you said at the time that Donald Trump was talking about Obama being born abroad. Quote, I told Jared I was particularly appalled by his father-in-law's birtherism stance, which I viewed as cynical and racist. He rolled his eyes and said, he doesn't really believe it, Elizabeth. He just knows Republicans are stupid and they'll buy it. Yeah. He really said that to you?
Yeah.
And what did that tell you about Jared Kushner's view of Donald Trump's Republican politics?
Well, I think it told me something about both of them.
What we've learned is that he doesn't want to be there. He said it in recent weeks. He said, you know what? I thought this was going to be easy. His words, wait a minute. I thought you said that you wanted to go, you pull your pants up or you pull your shirt sleeves up. Get out there. Do the hard work for the American people because the American people need a champion for them. No, no, no. No, he said. Really, I just thought this was going to be easy.
I loved my previous life. I had so many things going. I actually, this is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier. I thought it was more of a, I'm a details-oriented person. I think you would say that. But I do miss my old life. I like to work, so that's not a problem. But this is actually more work.
Actually, in his old life, he didn't work. He sat around, told people they were fired. Lied, stole money, made deals with the Russians. His old life involved no work. He doesn't understand your life. And what we're learning now, and what we're learning near the end of this man's life, he's 70, he doesn't have long left. What we're learning at the end of his life is that he stands by absolutely nothing that he says. And those aren't my words. Those are his words.
Did President Obama give you any advice that was helpful? That you think, wow,
Well, very nice to me, but after that, we've had some difficulties. So it doesn't matter. You know, words are less important to me than deeds. And you saw what happened with surveillance, and everybody saw what happened with surveillance.
Difficulties
and
how?
I thought that, well, you saw what happened with surveillance, and I think that was inappropriate.
What does that mean, sir?
You can figure that out yourself.
Well, the reason I asked is you said you called him sick and bad.
Look, you can figure it out yourself. He was very nice to me with words, but and when I was with him, but after that, there has been no relationship.
But you stand by that claim about him?
I don't stand by anything. I just, you can take it the way you want. I think our side's been proven very strongly, and everybody's talking about it. And frankly, it should be discussed.
I don't stand by anything. You can take from that what you want. Figure it out on your, figure it out for yourself. We should have known that this was coming. Those of us that voted for Hillary Clinton, whether we wanted to or not, we realized that this was coming. And then for Republicans, the wake-up moment, for a lot of them, it probably hasn't happened yet. His approval rating is in the 80s with Republicans, in the high 80s, like mid to high 80s. So they still have no idea that they're being fleeced right now. So here's where they're at. They've gotten the email that says that they are related to a Nigerian prince who just died in a horrible fiery car accident. And they are the next of kin. I've gotten one of these before. I used the last name Mausoleum, and somebody wrote to me, Mr. Mausoleum, so-and-so Mausoleum died in a fiery car accident. What we need you to do is get in contact with us. And here's the way it goes. When you get in contact with them, they say, you are the inheritor of 1.5, 1.6, 2.9, 3.8 million, whatever number they decide to bend over and yank out of their backside. You've won this much money. So here's where the Republicans are at with this. They've gotten the email, they've responded to the email, and they are now running down to Western Union to wire somebody that they've never met in their entire lives a $5,000 fee so that they can get their $1.5 million, $1.9 million, $3.8 million, $2.2 million, or whatever it is, because they just found out they're related to a Nigerian prince. They haven't made it to Western Union yet. This is the greatest analogy ever. But when they're going to get there, they're going to hand the money over. Western Union's going to say, this might be a scam. We don't think you're a Nigerian prince. And they're going to say, no, give him my money. Give him my money. Give him a $5,000 so that I can get my $1.8 million. Give him my money. And they're saying at Western Union, please, sir, we've seen this before. We're pretty sure this is a scam. This isn't a scam. I know this is. This is my Uncle Frank or Barney or whatever name they want to put. You send him the money because I want to get my money. And they're not listening to reason. And facts mean absolutely nothing. But the wake-up moment for them, for a lot of us, was when we merely received the email and knew that we weren't a Nigerian prince, and knew that there was no money. That was the moment for us. But for some folks, they didn't get it right away. But for Republicans, what it should have been was when the very first thing that the new Congress did, their very first act before the president even came into office, was to shut down the Office of Ethics.
It's important to understand that the president is now entering a world of public service. He's going to be asking his own appointees to make sacrifices. He's going to be asking our men and women in uniform to risk their lives in conflicts around the world. So no, I don't think divestiture is too high a price to pay to be the president of the United States of America.
Shutting down the ethics office because, my God, the things that they were planning on doing, they've all lawyered up now. Pence has his own lawyer. Trump has his own lawyer. Most of the senior officials that work for him, they all have their... They've all lawyered up now because they knew what was coming. And then the people came down. You shut down the freaking ethics office? What kind of crap do you guys plan on doing?
So the Office of Congressional Ethics was established back in 2008, essentially in the wake of the Abramoff scandal, the Mark Foley scandals. There was a public outcry and they realized they had to set up an independent watchdog to basically field complaints and concerns about campaign improprieties, personal behavior, other things. It's existed for the last 8 years, barely has a set of teeth, and has, you know, presented some information over the past few years that has led to the removal or the resignation of some lawmakers, but there's a belief that they could have done a lot more. What Republicans, let's be very specific about this, have done tonight is they had a closed-door meeting after the sun went down. Yes, those things actually do happen. And decided amongst themselves that when the new House convenes tomorrow afternoon, they're going to present a rules package that has to be voted on by Republicans and Democrats that will include closing that office and putting it under the House Ethics Committee. The reason is that a majority of these Republicans believe that the way that this other office has worked for the last 8 years is, in essence, unfair to them because it doesn't allow them a chance to appeal some of these complaints, and this new office won't be allowed to field anonymous tips, which is what the current one has been allowed to do. And this goes, it seems, against everything Donald Trump would have campaigned about, right? Draining the swamp and the desire to do, you know, things here in Washington to make it a more ethical place. Well, this seems to run counter to that.
It's supposed to make you cynical. It's supposed to make you skeptical. It's supposed to make you not trust government because those of us that are already a little bit skeptical, well, when Donald Trump came in, we believed in the system just a little bit less, and that's the point. It's to eventually eliminate it. And that's not our dream. That is the dream of the oligarchs. Jimmy Carter pointed out a few years ago publicly for the first time that we are effectively living in an oligarchy because we only do now what wealthy, super-duper wealthy people want us to do.
You know, good, decent, hard-working, middle-class people feeling that they are getting cheated by the government and by society. And they don't get the same element of health care. They don't get the same quality education. They don't get the same political rights. Particularly after the stupid decision of the Supreme Court on Citizens United, when it said that it's an unlimited amount of money going into campaigns. But now they feel that even in politics, their choice of a candidate to be president or governor or congressman or whoever is not the same as a rich person's. And also, once that candidate gets in office, if it's successful, quite often, the average person feels that they are repaying their contributions with legal bribery, and it's legal. And the justice system has also gone down. Long before we had this last election, when I left the White House, for instance, 1 out of 1,000 people were in prison. Now, 7 people out of 1,000 are in prison. 7 times as many people who are Americans are now in prison as they were just when I left the White House. So the feeling of an average person that I'll be treated fairly by the justice system is missing. So, you know, basic human rights, income, status in society, health care, education, participation in politics, justice, the things in which we used to have complete faith now have been distorted by the rich people getting richer and the poor people getting poorer. And when the rich people get a candidate in office, they can be sure that the tax laws and everything else are going to keep them getting richer and richer, but the average person suffers. So I think that dissatisfaction with the existing system of politics resulted in the outcome of the election in 2016 in the United States. People were willing just to take a chance and to abandon democracy and what we know about is basic principles and try something new, no matter what it was.
Oligarchy is the reason that Flint doesn't have clean water. Oligarchy is the reason that the Pentagon has a massive, massive budget that dwarfs every other country in the world. Oligarchy is the reason that we have ISIS, because it's born out of our wars that we fought not just out of aggression, but so that some military contractor living in suburban Virginia could have another mansion. We have to keep spending money. Oligarchy is the reason we are now looking to cut the lunch program for children that do not get decent nutrition at food. Oligarchy is the reason why we want to strip away, maybe it's racism, why we want to strip away the standards that we have for school lunches. Oligarchy is the reason that we want to get rid of the ethics office. Oligarchy is the reason that we have Donald Trump and why we are solving none of our problems right now and only creating more, and why the White House is entirely mired in deep, deep scandals right now, and nobody, not Democrats, not Republicans, not anybody, is getting anything that they want or that they need. So it's not meant to make you skeptical. It's not meant to make you cynical. It's not meant to make you want to just throw your hands up. But listen to this. And this isn't to relitigate the election. But what this is to let's learn from the mistakes of the past and let's look at what we can do going forward. And there is no savior. There is no one person that's just going to show up and we're all going to be able to get behind and it's just going to fix everything. See, had Bernie Sanders become president, it maybe wouldn't have necessarily mattered as much. For some things, it would have. Certainly for the school program, for what we're thinking about doing with ISIS, with Social Security, the bankers, and some of these other things, yeah, that would have mattered. But what if he ended up with a Republican Congress? See, a president needs a good Congress as well. But the thing that we should learn from Bernie Sanders in last year's campaign, that there is a way to do this. There is a way to get good people into office without giving in to the oligarchs.
The most remarkable thing about the last election was actually Bernie Sanders, not Trump. Bernie Sanders broke with a century of American political history. In American elections for back to the late 19th century, elections are basically bought, literally. You can predict with remarkable accuracy electability simply on the basis of campaign funding. Sanders came along, no support from the corporate sector, no support from the wealthy. The media simply dismissed him as ridiculous. He was basically unknown. He even used a scare word, socialist. And he would have won the Democratic nomination if it hadn't been for the shenanigans of the party managers. If you take a look at popularity today, he is far and away the most popular figure in the American political system.
The oligarchs are the reason why the white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, the white knights, the white nationalists, it's the reason why they are enjoying a resurgence right now. And it's not that oligarchs really give a crap about them or really want the world to look like the world that they want, but they know that those hate groups will get behind a different kind of hate group. That hate group being the United States Republican Party. And I understand that the SPLC isn't going to recognize them as that, but I am going to recognize them as that. And you can disagree with me all you want. So oligarchy has ruined our democracy, and nobody's getting what they need. None of our problems are being solved. Kids aren't getting their lunches and all the rest. But we've seen that it's fairly easy to break out of oligarchy. We just need to look to these other candidates and look to ourselves and understand that we're not in this hopeless cycle that we absolutely cannot get out of. There is a way to get out of it, and we saw a massive shining example of that in last year's election. I'd say 2 years ago, roughly 2 years ago, more than half of the country had never even heard of Bernie Sanders. And now you can't throw a rock without hitting two people that have at least heard of him and agree with at least one, if not more than one, of his policies. It was somebody that even the Republicans liked. So there is a way out of this, and it's not Bernie Sanders. Don't get that name out of your head. But the example that was set by him in last year's election showed us that the oligarchs don't necessarily own everything, that they don't necessarily have total control, and that we, the people, we still outnumber them. Yeah, they've got the money. It's true. We can't get away from that. But we have the numbers. All we need now is the will. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire. You can't put out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. We will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. Summertime, everybody. Get the hell outside now. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.